You know what you're listening to, don't you?
Station 2FC Sydney. Studio time is 8:45. Mr. Len Maurice, the popular baritone, will sing I Fell in Love with Your Voice.
I fell in love with your voice.
That is very, very, very early Radio National. Sort of. Certainly, 2FC became RN in Sydney later on. Macquarie University's Virginia Madsen, who used to work here, is doing a huge project on the history of RN.
The idea of a more serious network being separated off from, say, like we have today, the metropolitan networks, 702 and so on, that doesn't really develop until a little bit later. And certainly after the Second World War, we get the first separation between two national networks, the National Serious Network and the Lighter Network.
They can't be called the National Serious Network and the Lighter Network.
They used to call it the Serious and the Light. That's in the kind of memos and discourse around the ABC.
What did the listeners call it?
The listeners would think of it more as the national network and the interstate network.
Oh.
They would think of separate stations. So 2FC might have been the one you listened to in Sydney, although sometimes they swap around and 2BL was actually the Sirius network. That sounds a bit dull and boring being the Sirius network, I suppose. And it wasn't entirely serious at all. There was lots of comedy and, of course, as you know, programs like The Goons were always on.
So when do we get a kind of thing that we'd identify as RN?
Well, I think you could say that from the post-war period, you get a cultural network that has 50-50 music and talk.
As much as that in terms of music?
Yes. Classical music was a key part of the early Radio National, then called Radio 2, the second network.
And half of it was music. What
else? There were dance bands. There was some folk music as we head more into the 60s. Even contemporary youth music was experimented with just before Double J came on.
Right. So what were its influences? Because I think what it's easy to think is that, you know, it's kind of copied what became Radio 4 in the UK. But it's more complicated than that, isn't it?
Yeah. I think the ABC was very strongly influenced by the Reithian BBC. And you can see very similar departments and kinds of programming happening here. So they had a program area called Talks, where prominent thinkers, scientists, artists, writers, all sorts of people would do a talk. It would be a bit like a lecture or something like that.
There was still an editor of Talks when I joined Radio National, which is in 1998.
Yeah. And it was part of this idea that the public service broadcaster could educate and inform the citizenry and people who didn't, largely for many of them, didn't have access to education beyond the age of 15. So education was really important in the early days.
Were there other similarities if you're comparing to other public broadcasters? Are there any apart from the BBC?
Well, after the Second World War, you certainly have the public service broadcasters in Europe modelling themselves on the BBC after particularly those governments that had sided with the Nazis. So there was this whole idea of re-educating the citizenry and becoming democratic organisations. Many of those programmes like Radio France or RAI in Italy, they were modelled on the BBC, but they're also a little bit different. They were more state broadcasters, so they could be regarded as sometimes being the voice of the state.
Yes.
But they still were public service broadcasters and took on some of those ideals.
So in the more modern times of RN, sometimes it's been a bit of a political football, the idea of the cultural elites, which has been a line run by politicians of some persuasion and some parts of the press. You've got this sort of approach of elitist, highbrow, not for the masses. It's a way of knocking it. How long has that been around?
Well, what's interesting is it's not just conservative side of politics that's been attacking Radio National for those sorts of things. It's also been the left side of politics and the academy. Most of the material that I could find on Radio National from 20 years back was critical of the ABC for being elitist and highbrow and too white and too this and too that. Mm. Appreciation of the ABC has only started to happen much more recently. The attention to Radio National from the conservative side of politics in particular seems to me out of all proportion Well, certainly to the number of listeners that Radio National has in cities.
It's never had a huge number of listeners.
Not in each city, no. But I think that attention is there because politicians from whatever side know that there is power in Radio National. Figures from all walks of life, leaders in all sorts of fields who are on Radio National, in some way I would hypothesise who have an impact, but we just haven't traced it yet. That impact might be on the way science is done. Robin Williams' science show and earlier versions of that created a culture of public science that we'd never had before. It was all behind closed doors. And no doubt we will discover some of the impacts there.
How close, over its history, has it come to death?
At this stage, I can't be sure of that. But in the early 2000s, the digital era was here, but the media hadn't fully realised what that meant. So there were digital practices coming in, but ideas of podcasting, streaming on demand, even using the internet as a space to make the work visible, there was no thought of that really yet. So at that point, I think you got this dominant idea that the radio should be these formats and it should get as many people as possible, whether it's the ABC or not. Radio National had smaller audiences. It cost more than any other network. Certainly, you know, in the early 2000s, I think the figures show that it was very expensive because it employs a lot of staff and specialist staff and it takes a longer time to make programs.
Many fewer now, of course.
And certainly these were the attacks on Radio 4 and Radio 3 in the UK. Here, there was a kind of lack of faith in this product. It was seen as dowdy and old-fashioned. Then the Radio National manages to survive that, and then we get demand from the audience, we get the BBC doing its podcasting service, the on-demand idea, and suddenly there is rejuvenation.
We've talked about podcasting a lot, of course, on the Media Report. So what is your time frame and what are you hoping to finish up with?
We would like to write a book exploring this network. We're very open-minded, though, to look at where it might not be delivering, where it may not have delivered innovation for whatever reason. What is this form that is unique in Australia but not unique in the world?
All right, good luck with it. It sounds like it's going to be a labour of love.
Thank you.
Virginia Madsen's at Macquarie University and 1 year into what will be a 3-year project. Next week, the Media Report will come to you from the Storyology Conference. We're going to grapple with ethical problems in journalism. We've got a terrific panel, Michelle Gunn, who's the editor of The Weekend Australian, Hugh Rimmington from Network 10, and Alex Lee from BuzzFeed. Before that, tonight, in fact, it's the Andrew Ollie Lecture, and Helen McCabe, the editor of the Australian Women's Weekly, will deliver it. Just time to thank producer Jackie May and sound engineer Lila Schoner. I'm Richard Adie. Thanks for listening.